This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, and it is hour number three. Good Friday to you. We've been talking this morning about game one of the NBA Finals with the Celtics taking game one of the Chase Center last night. But there was another game last night in the postseason that I thought could get some attention as well. And that was game two of the Western Conference Finals in the NHL as the Colorado Avalanche and the Edmonton Oilers were battling in Denver. Now, we saw them in game one, an 8-6 victory by the Avalanche. But what we also saw was Darcy Kuemper, the goaltender for the Avalanche, leave the game with an upper body injury, thus bringing in the backup goaltender. And basically all he did, Pavel Francouz, all he did was throw a shutout, stopping all 24 shots on net that Edmonton threw at him. Now, listen, I don't want to get hyperbolic here, but I have to admit, it's probably one of the better fill-in jobs that we see in sports to play a high-scoring offense like Edmonton in a situation where there's sort of quote-unquote blood in the water, for a lack of a better term, when the Avalanche are down their star goaltender. For the Edmonton Oilers to just light him up while he was in net and get a Game 2 victory and even up the series at a game apiece. But instead, the Avalanche exploded for three goals in the second period, and that young man in net, Pavel Francouz, he stopped all Edmonton shots, all 24 of them. Colorado, on the other end, had 40. Good for him. That has got to be a high-pressure situation. We know in the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs, you simply cannot win without a hot goaltender. You can't. You can score, but eventually that scoring gets slowed down. You need, on the other side, you need a brick wall and net. And when you're down your top goaltender and your backup has to come in, and oh, by the way, he throws in a shutout in a game two that gives you a nice two games to none lead and a nice cushion heading to Edmonton for game three, it's going to be one of the highlight performances of not only the night, but of quite a while. So good for him. Good for Pavel Francouz. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing his name right. I didn't even know who he was until he got in net last night. But the Avalanche are up 2-0. The Rangers and Tampa Bay Lightning tonight at the Garden, with the Rangers trying to go up 2-0 in the Eastern Conference Finals. And, of course, both series will continue along this weekend. More on the NBA as we continue along. And then we got Rex Hoggard joining us. We'll talk about the LIV Golf Tour. Dustin Johnson's playing in it. Will Phil play in it? And what does the PGA plan to do about it, really? We'll get that down. And by the way, Hideki Matsuyama, what's up with that 3-wood? We'll ask him all of those questions coming up as Hour 3 rolls along this morning.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. So game one of the NBA Finals goes to Boston. They win 120-108. I don't know if you noticed this on Twitter, Rod, but Mark Jones, who was the play-by-play guy last night, filling in for Mike Breen, who was out with COVID, called the Celtics run an insurrection. And Twitter was like, what? Weird choice of words to describe a run in a basketball game.
He might want to retract that one.
Insurrection. Slow down. At one point, and I posted this on Twitter, he said, call the medical examiner, because the Celtics were, you know, kind of putting the game to bed. I think announcers, you need to slow down sometimes on the descriptive narrative of what you're trying to say. I don't know if insurrection and call the medical examiner, I don't know if they work as well as people think they work. I don't know. You try to be clever because you try to be unique. Everybody wants that kind of signature thing.
But right.
Sometimes I think simplicity is just easier.
Or you just do a bunch, and if you strike out, you strike out.
Yeah, right. You try a few to see if you can get one. It's like the home run. People want a home run call. Like they want a really good home run call. But the problem is, it's almost better to just let one develop naturally rather than you creating something and forcing it on on the listeners, right?
I know. I'm waiting for a draft guru to come out, you know, the following year and go, oh, man, that guy was a bigger bust than Morgana.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You're like, oh, okay, very, very good. That was creative right off the top of the head, wasn't it? Oh, gosh.
Can we come up with other worse ones?
Yeah. I mean, I get it. Like, if you're if he's calling the game, he's probably trying to find something. Like, how do you describe this, man? It's like 17-0. This is incredible. They're leading by eight. It's 2 minutes to go. And then he says insurrection.
And yeah.
Like, oh, I don't think it's.
Do you think it was one of those things he said and then immediately regretted? Like,
yeah, like,
oh, man. I can't get that one back. Like, but oh, no. It's not as bad as, oh, what's his name from Cincinnati?
Yeah, Tom Brenneman.
Tom Brenneman.
Just the Castellanos home run during an apology.
Yeah.
On an open mic. Yeah. Good one. That's a good one. Yeah, that might have been just the. You know what? I didn't mean to say it. Because sometimes you say words that you think in one word, but you say another word. Maybe he was thinking something else. Insurrection doesn't seem to fit. But no. if he was thinking that's the word he wanted to use, it just fell flat. And of course, when Twitter blows up, everybody jumps in on it.
Oh, because you get all of a sudden somebody who didn't even know what was going on stumbles across and like, oh, I've got something to say about that.
Yeah. Well, and Twitter's a nasty place in a way. You know what I mean? Like, I bet you if Twitter was around when Vin Scully was calling game six of the 86 World Series, people would have been like, what a dumb announcer. He didn't even say anything after that ball went through Buckner's legs. He just said, here comes night and the Mets win it, and then silence.
And then somebody
doesn't he get paid by the word?
Then somebody would have brought up videos like, see, it wasn't the first time he did that. He also did it during the catch.
Yeah, he did it during Hank Aaron's home run, too.
Oh, my God.
This guy's. They paid this guy to do this? I thought you were paid to talk.
He doesn't say anything during the sport's biggest moments.
Yeah, exactly.
And then
this guy tells way too many stories.
And then he does it under the guise of, I'm letting the scene speak for itself. Oh, yeah. I could do that.
I could do that. Why don't you just hire me? I'm sure I'm cheaper. Yeah, because Twitter's a nasty place, man.
Yep.
You know? So I'm not gonna harp on Mark Jones too much, but I was just curious if anybody else caught it. I know Twitter certainly did. But at the same time, you know what I mean? So, like, I've been in this position too. I've called a number of different kind of games, not on the level that he's calling it, but sometimes you say something, you go, ah, all right, that didn't
matter. Oh, all the time.
You know, that didn't make sense.
Would have been better if he went Inquisition.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And then broke out into song and dance.
Yeah, exactly. That's what he should have done. Inquisition.
That right there, we probably alienated a good portion of the audience. Because if you don't know Mel Brooks, then you don't know what we're talking about.
You don't know what we're talking about. So, goodness. But, yeah, I mean, what a tough assignment. I mean, he's a veteran play-by-play guy. But, hey, it's the finals. It's ABC. He got the job. He got the Game 7 assignment on Sunday night down in Miami when Mike Breen was out. So,
speaking of announcers, did you see who might be the replacement for Drew Brees?
Jason Garrett. I know. Where did that come from?
What golden statue did he rub?
I know. How did that work? Like, where did that come from?
You're the head coach of the Cowboys for way too long.
Way longer than people probably should have been.
Get canned, and then you're like, I'll just go join the Giants.
Yeah.
Why not? Then you're done there, and you're like, you know what? I'll try this announcing thing.
And probably going to get paid a lot of money, too, because that seems to be the new thing now.
Probably, you know, getting paid more than he should.
I swear, it's...
Will he make more than his former quarterback?
They were talking about Ryan Fitzpatrick making $200 million in a broadcasting deal with Amazon. Is that true?
That can't be right.
Like $200 million? Are they basically saying, you know what? Your insight is so good. I'm going to tell you what. Here's what we're going to do. Here's the way we're going to negotiate. This is the contract, and this is a blank check. You fill it in without as many zeros as you want, and we'll cash it. Is that what they're doing? Because you don't need to pay these guys that much money.
No.
$200 million.
They get paid that much playing.
You mean to tell me a guy that's bounced around the league for 17 years, as much as we love him, and we love him, like, it's a bidding war for Ryan Fitzpatrick's services?
Well, Tony, he will have insight on every front office in the NFL.
That's true. You know, I mean,
could describe every locker room with accuracy. And he's Harvard educated.
It's going to be great when they broadcast their first playoff game and they go, all right, Ryan, you've been here before. What's the mindset of this team as they get ready for the postseason?
Wait, what?
I'm assuming, based on people I've had talks with, that it's pretty intense. Wouldn't know myself, but I guess it's you get a little nervous. You try to treat it as that's what I hear. You try to treat it as a normal game. You try to go out there and do the best you possibly can. Hope for the best. Maybe get a little luck. Meanwhile, there's a guy going, and we're paying what for this? Brilliant insight. $200 million. Man, it's crazy. And again, it's a fake bidding war. It's a bidding war you're making up. The industry is making up. It's not real. No one is not going to – you're not losing anything. Like, you know, for example, if I ran a fast food restaurant and you ran a fast food restaurant,
yep,
and you know, we're competing, and there was a guy that made burgers the best in the world. He made the best fast food burgers. We'd have a bidding war for him, and then we would hope that we would draw enough customers and that you wouldn't draw enough customers and maybe you go out of business. But this isn't that. This is analysts. Analysts getting nine figures to talk football in games we're going to watch anyway. And like, no, we have to land him. We have to land him. If we don't land him, CBS will let him go to CBS. I'm going to lose sleep over this. What are you panicking?
Yeah,
you
apparently
really honestly think I'm going to tune into a game on Amazon to hear a 17-year-old journeyman quarterback from Harvard talk about his experiences?
Well, I was going to say this, too. Apparently, you know, every single year there's a new hot analyst that's right. Never done it before. So just wait.
Yeah.
Be patient. If you missed out on Fitzpatrick, it's all right.
I completely would do it that way.
You know who's going to make a great analyst as soon as he retires?
Is?
Larry Fitzgerald. Why not?
Larry Fitzgerald, sure.
I have no idea. I'm just throwing it out there. I don't think Frank Gore would be a good analyst because I don't remember him really saying much in interviews.
No.
But Larry Fitzgerald is charismatic, and he's got great hair.
But I also, in all due respect, I honestly think that some of these guys, and we actually kind of touched on a little bit with Sean McVay, right? TV wants Sean McVay. And there was a buzz about Sean McVay leaving coaching to get money. If you're a player and you're like, I got a ring, I'm beating my body up to a pulp, I'm 32 years old, my knees are kind of halfway shot, screw it. I'll go get nine figures from one of these networks to yap about football like everybody else. Why not? It's right there for the taking. And we don't even know if they're good or not. And they don't even care if they're good or not. Like, has anybody ever given Ryan Fitzpatrick a booth trial run during the offseason? Like, hey, come in and call this game that we have on tape just to see if he's decent? No, they just assume he's decent because they like his interviews. They like the way he talks to the media. He's Harvard educated, smart guy. He's got some experience in this league with different teams, so he's got kind of knows what he's talking about. And here's a huge check. Here's a huge check. Yeah, that's what we got. Jason Garrett, same thing. Why would I want to hear what Jason Garrett has to say about anything? Like, I'm going to tune in and listen to Jason Garrett? I think he has said enough when he was with the Cowboys all those years. But I'm going to listen to Jason Garrett break down what? Who? Like who? Josh Allen? I'm going to watch him break down Josh Allen? That's crazy. Absolutely crazy. All right, we got Rex Hoggard joining us in about 18 minutes. We're going to talk golf with him as the LIV Tour announced its player roster. There were some surprises on there, including Dustin Johnson. So we'll get his take on that. Coming up, one college basketball player returning and may have said some more about where we are in college athletics. That's next on Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. Again, Game 1, Celtics last night, 120-108. Al Horford, what a game. What a game. And you know what? Good for Brad Stevens. He made that trade. He got rid of Kemba Walker. He brought back Al Horford. It is paying off. He hired Ime Udoka. Remember, this was a guy in Brad Stevens, Coach Butler, had two finals appearances. Got the job with the Celtics, young man, get his first NBA job. Everyone thought the Celtics would stink. He got him going good right off the bat. But then an early exit in the playoffs last year, he gets promoted. Danny Ainge leaves after, what, 19 seasons and in the front office in Boston. Here comes Brad Stevens. He takes over that job. Ime Udoka gets hired by Brad Stevens. They make this trade. Good for them. They're in the NBA Finals. And for Al Horford, again, this is the second time in this postseason that he has had a game where he has been needed to produce, and he did produce. 6 3-pointers last night. 6 for the center. Not bad. Not bad. And Derek White, the same thing. He had 5. 5 3-pointers. Jason Tatum struggled, 3 of 17 on the floor, but dished out 13 assists. So the ball was passing through his hands into set situations where he could go out there and get, you know, get things happening. Great for Boston to make that comeback on that 17-0 run in the fourth quarter when everything was going up Golden State. We'll see what game 2 is on Sunday. All right, so the college basketball news, Drew Timmy has announced that he is returning to Gonzaga. Which, hey, great, going to be playing in his senior season, going to play for another year for the Bulldogs. A couple of things about this. He's a two-time All-American, okay? And he entered for the draft early, but this has happened before where we are right now in college athletics, where a player, you know, declares for the draft but can wait. They've been given sort of a little bit of room so that they can pull back if they don't feel like they're going to go in a situation where they're going to, you know, be taken in a position they want to be taken. And Drew Timmy, by all accounts, looked like he was going to be a second round pick. Some NBA executives and scouts have sort of questioned some of his NBA level, but he's a two-time All-American in the college game. But remember too, there's a couple of things about this. He can return. He's going to try to solidify his game and get a little better for next year's draft. Maybe another year of seasoning can move him up the draft board. But there's a couple of things about this. One, is it a tough decision? Yeah, if you really want to go to the NBA, you try to find any way you could go to the NBA. But there's a couple of things. If you feel like you're getting an honest assessment from your agent and the people around you, like, look, we've talked to NBA execs. You can believe all you want that you're a first-round talent, but the reality of it is that you're not being pegged that way. You're not being thought of that way. You may need another year. Where do you want to do that year? Okay? Now, in the past, a lot of these guys would have said, well, get me to Europe. Get me in some league in Spain, Greece, wherever. Let me get some professional basketball experience. Some would return to college and go, I'm willing to go into the college game, right? And go back to the college game and you know, put myself in better positions to get better at my skills. But also too, with NIL, it doesn't seem like a no-brainer. Why would you go overseas now? You can make some really good money in college. If you're Drew Timmy and you're playing for Gonzaga, one of the top basketball teams in the country and has been for a while, there are offers on the table. There's some NIL offers on the table in that part of the country. And the other thing, and I don't think this should be overlooked here, how many times has Gonzaga came close to winning a national title? Seriously, how close? I mean, Gonzaga's been a top team for a number of years. They've been to the Final Four a number of times. They've played for the national championship a couple of times. I think they're a team that is on the cusp of winning sometime. And if you're Drew Timmy and you're going there going back for your senior year, there's an opportunity next year to try to get that championship. Take it. No need to go to Europe and waste in an area no one's paying attention when you can play at home, play for your college, get a good NIL deal. Put yourself on the national map again because you'll have another number one team in the country. But also, too, you get a chance to do something that you're never going to get to do again. You will not have this chance after next season, and that's deliver a title to Gonzaga, a school that has been on the brink of breaking through for this title for quite a while now. And again, he's a two-time All-American, so he's a guy that might have an NBA skills with a little bit more seasoning, but this is what I think is going to start happening in the college game. You want to replace one and done players. And this is not the Drew Timmy's not a one and done player. Of course he's going for a senior season, but you want to NIL can help, right? There's always going to be a one and done. There's always going to be talent too good for college basketball. They have to stay out a year. So might as well go to Kentucky, wherever, play a year. There's always going to be that. But not everybody can be a one-and-done player, but a lot of players in the past felt like they had to. They knew that, college wasn't for them. That's not what they wanted to do. They wanted to play professional basketball. They wanted to do it at the NBA, but God bless them, they wanted to do it somewhere. And now NIL is allowing you to get money while you play at the collegiate level. So if you want the college game to retain some of its talent, even the guys that can't be first-round draft picks, NIL can do it. This decision by Drew Timmy, in a nutshell, can be looked at in a number of ways. A guy going back to refine his skills. A guy going back to help his college try to get over the hump and win a national championship. A guy that knows financially he can still make a lot of money, where the second choice may be going overseas, making money, but being far away from home. Playing in a league you don't know, speaking a language you don't know, eating food you're not quite familiar with, all of those things. You know, when I did my 2 years in minor league basketball, I remember talking to the guys that were on our teams about playing overseas. And it wasn't as easy as, well, you just went to France and played basketball. It wasn't as easy as that. It's a whole culture difference, right? And being away from home, friends and family aren't coming to see you, right? And that was really difficult. But the CBA wasn't really anything, or the IBL and the IBA and Even the G League, that's probably, 20 years old now? I mean, can anybody name 4 G League teams? I mean, I remember G League teams don't exist anymore. Like, it's not exactly on the forefront of our sports culture. But college basketball is. Especially if you're Gonzaga. And everybody knows you'll be the number one team. Another strong team, another strong recruiting class, all of that. Even with Chet Holmgren gone, Andrew Nembhard gone, all of those players that have come and leaving, you're still going to be one of the top teams because you play in the West Coast Conference that you dominate every single year. Here's your opportunity. So a lot to be said about this, really. Seriously, a lot to be said. And by the way, a young man by the name of Malachi Smith, and he played for Chattanooga last year. He was outstanding in the SoCon. Believe me. Chattanooga basketball is not huge where I live, but you kind of know him. Malachi Smith's a good player. He committed to Gonzaga. He's heading to Gonzaga, so they got him. So there's a lot of reasons to look up. And if you're Drew Timmy and you're getting the feedback that, not really that quite there, you go back to school. All right, we got Rex Hoggard joining us coming up from Golf Channel. I apologize. Drew a blank there. We're going to talk some golf with him. LIV Tour has announced its participants for the tournament coming up next week in London. Dustin Johnson's on it. A couple of questions we have about this. What did anybody see Dustin Johnson coming in terms of going to that league? You know, going to league. What kind of personality does Dustin Johnson have to put up with the scrutiny and the lack of sponsors? What about the punishment the PGA Tour said? You won't play on the PGA Tour if you join this. Do we really believe it? Down the road, if Dustin Johnson wants to play in the Memphis Open, whatever it is, are they going to let him? Because they would love to have him at Memphis or San Antonio or these other tour stops. And what does it mean for other players when they look to see Dustin Johnson on that list for them to play?
And what is this tour called?
Yeah, what is this tour called? So we have three options, right? You and I came up with three options. It's either the LIV Tour, it's either the LIV Tour, or it's the 54 Tour because they play 54 holes and LIV is 54 in Roman numerals.
How about this? Can we
By
call
way,
it?
I like it.
Can we call it Tour 54?
Tour 54.
Mmm.
That'll be good.
And you know, you do like a retro Studio 54 sign, yeah. Signage.
Has anybody done a professional golf, Top Golf tournament thing? You ever go to Top Golf?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun, right?
Oh, I have a blast.
Like, what do you think like Jordan Spieth would do at Topgolf?
Destroy it.
Yeah, wouldn't that be fun?
I think everything would hit the back of the net.
Yeah, but I mean like play the accuracy games.
Yeah.
You know? Like how would he judge? How does a professional golfer judge?
All right, okay, let me ask you this, okay? You just brought this up. You know, because we just had the match and we deemed it very unwatchable.
Right.
Because we don't care. But if you had like, you know, Jordan Spieth, Rory, you know, pick two other golfers and they did like the accuracy, like, you know, the game where you're like almost throwing darts.
Yeah, right.
With golf balls.
That sounds like fun.
Is that watchable?
Yeah, I think it's watchable. I think it'd be watchable, especially if they do it from the upper deck. The highest deck possible at top.
That's right.
And then judge the distances that way. Rex Hoggard next.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive Insurance, making bundling home and auto easily. Learn more at progressive.com. Rex Hager joins us from Golf Channel. Talk about the LIV Tour and Dustin Johnson playing over there, as well as other things in golf. How are you, Rex?
Morning. Dustin Johnson and 41 other players, to be fair to Dustin.
That's right. That is a good point. Good point. By the way, right off the bat, we've been discussing this. Is it called the LIV Tour? Is it the LIV Tour? What's the official pronunciation of this?
I've never gotten a good answer. I think it's Roman numerals 54, which
yeah.
I guess in theory is, yeah. I think it's the lowest number you could possibly shoot on a golf course if you birdie every hole, if I'm doing the math right, depending on the par or whatever the case may be.
Well, Ron made I think a good point. Ron made a good point. It's a 54-hole tournament. So it's right? They're doing 54 holes?
That could be it as well. Yeah.
I don't think
Greg Norman. Yeah, that might be it. Yeah, that's a good one. I'll buy that.
Yeah. See, Ron, we good stuff there. We couldn't figure this out. We've been calling it the LIV Tour. We feel like everybody else is, so that's what we're doing. Was there a signal Dustin Johnson was going to do this? Does this come out of nowhere, or was there a feeling like he was going to commit to this thing?
No, this was out of nowhere. And look, there's been tons of rumors, and this field was supposed to be out on Friday, last Friday, and it was supposed to be out on Saturday, and it was supposed to be out on Sunday. We knew something was going on behind the scenes to hold up, because we knew a list of players, and players had gotten pretty chatty about it the last couple of weeks, where, yes, I'm going, yes, I'm not going. Kevin Na had been pretty open about the idea that he was going to play, at least in this first event. But we knew something was going on behind the scenes. But no, DJ was a surprise.
So how has been the immediate reaction of this? Like, Dustin Johnson, it's not the same result as what Phil Mickelson went through, but is there the same feeling of, wow, this, you know, the same scrutiny, the same criticism?
Probably not to the extent, because DJ didn't come out and say the incendiary things that filled it,
yeah.
Where he didn't come out and you know, accuse the PGA Tour of the obnoxious greed and everything else that Phil did over the last couple of months. I think there was a level of surprise, and there was probably a level of a little bit of looking across, trying to figure out exactly what motivates him on this. And the answer to that is money. But no, I don't think you're going to have the heavy-handed criticism of DJ that you had with Phil, because DJ has been virtually silent about this.
There's a lot of money here, and believe me, I get it. But if you take away the PGA Tour, if you take away something that can help your legacy, and then you just go, I'm just after the money. Is Dustin Johnson, does he appear to be the kind of guy that goes, I don't care about any of that stuff. I just like, they're paying me nine figures to join this. I'm going to go join this.
Maybe. And I thought Rory said it best earlier this week when he was asked about it at the memorial in the press conference. He said he was asked specifically if the players who have decided to go, do you think they have any interest in ever playing the PGA Tour again? And Rory kind of paused for a long moment, and he said, no, probably not. And I don't know if that's the case for DJ. I think in this particular case, Rory was probably referring to some of his European Ryder Cup teammates, Ian Poulter, Sergio Garcia, Lee Westwood, those guys who also made the jump. I think in DJ's case, and this is going to play out over the next months, if not years, I think DJ probably wants it both ways. He probably wants to play the LIV Tour and take those nine figures, which I think anybody can understand why. And he also wants to go after legacy, which would be the major championships in his mind. And in this particular case, I don't know how that's going to play out. The idea is, oh, the PGA Tour is going to suspend or expel or whatever else to these players who have defied this order not to play in these events. We don't know where the majors are going to land. And we've gotten indications, and they've suggested that, yes, we're going to stand with the tour. But there's no guarantee, because this is going to end up in a court of law. And I think Dustin and a lot of these players think they can have it both ways.
Time will certainly tell on this, so I'm asking you to speculate a bit. I know the line in the sand by the PGA Tour has been pretty sharp, but could this down the road be very similar to a parent saying you're grounded for a month, but then you only get a week? Like, is there a point where the PGA Tour goes, you know what, we made our case a year ago, 2 years ago, but you know what? Dustin Johnson can play in Memphis or San Antonio or wherever.
I don't think they can. I'm sure that there's elements inside Ponte Vedra Beach, inside PGA Tour HQ, who are thinking, let's find a way to work around this, because there is no good ending now. I mean, you're only picking the worst of bad options at this point if you're the tour, because, again, this is going to end up an illegal fight. And there's no guarantee you're going to win that legal fight, and they're probably going to get injunctions, so these players are going to end up probably being able to play the tour anyway. So in their minds, I bet there's plenty of lawyers and executives who are thinking, can't we just come to some sort of understanding? But if you're the commissioner, if you're Jay Monahan, you have drawn this hard line. I don't see how you waver off of it. There's a reason why he didn't talk to Liv Golf before. I mean, they approached him years ago about working with the tour, and they said no, and it's because the corporate sponsors were never going to stand with the tour in this situation. We've already seen it. Yeah. RBC dropped Dustin as fast as humanly possible. UPS dropped Lee Westwood and Louis Oosthuizen as fast as humanly possible. There's companies that would never be associated with this league because it's backed by the Saudi Public Investment Fund. And so the tour, Jay Monahan, had to be aware of that.
Is this the PGA Tour, are they more creating this stand because it's a new tour and it's new competition, or because of who's backing it and the controversies of who's backing it, the sort of sports washing debate that we've had now? Is it, if anybody had started a tour and no controversy, would they be as line in the sand upset as they seem to be about this?
Yes. If Warren Buffett would have thrown up his billions to create what we have right now, right, which is a tour that's going to compete head to head on U.S. soil with the PGA Tour, and the PGA Tour doesn't have the resources to compete with it. Because right now, Warren Buffett, let's say, for example, could just add another zero. And yeah, it's not going to impact his bottom line one way or the other. Liv Golf can just add another zero to whatever offers they're making. The Tour can't do that. The Tour is in really good shape financially, not that good a shape. I mean, we're talking about a bottomless well of money, pretty much, when it comes to, well, that's a bad euphemism. Sorry about that. But we're talking about a lot of money when we're talking about this. So I think the PGA Tour would always be against this. They would always have to push back because this is a model that they can't compete with. The fact that it's the Saudis and it's the public investment fund, that just gives them an avenue to be critical on other levels. So now you can make an argument that, you know, this is about legacy, and through proxies, they've also made the argument that this is about moral decisions. Are you going to do something that's clearly sports washing? So I think that makes it easy for them. Nah, they would always dig in on this. This was always going to be tough competition.
Now that we have a list, now that we know who's playing in this, how soon do other players go, you know what, as soon as this gets to be part of the normal thing, I'm jumping ship and joining this thing?
I think we might see more. I mean, there's 42 players right now in the field. It's a 48-player field. I think we'll see a few more additions before we even get to next Thursday, when this is supposed to, they're supposed to tee off in the first event just outside of London. I think we'll see more names added to that list. And I think that as this goes on, there was a feeling within tour circles that the big names, and Dustin was kind of in that category loosely, were going to wait until after the first two or three were played. They were going to see what the tour's response was. They were going to see how these events went down before they committed to it for understandable reasons. I think you'll see that. If this is successful and you start seeing star players looking at players, and I hate to put it in this context, but players that they know they can beat, whoever that might be, if you're, I'm just going to throw it out there just because he's been sort of tied to it. If you're Brooks Koepka and you're seeing some of the players on this tour who you know you can beat any day of the week, and they're making millions of dollars every single week, both on and off the golf course, it's going to be hard to ignore that.
Yeah. Phil Mickelson, he's been in a hiatus for quite a while now. Eventually, he's got to come out. Do you think he actually goes to London and plays in this thing?
I don't know that he goes to London and plays in this one. I think he's probably in that category of let's wait and see. I think he's probably at a crossroads because, again, what we referenced earlier, in one paragraph, he torched both sides. Yeah. He torched the PGA Tour and he torched Liv Golf. And that's going to be hard. He's going to have to tuck his tail between his legs and publicly come out and apologize and be very, very humble, which Phil doesn't do that very well. We all know that by now. And it, one way or the other. And I don't see him doing that for the PGA Tour at this stage in his career. It's easy for players. And I made this argument yesterday on our podcast on golfchannel.com, is that if you look at every other sport, the successful teams, and I'll go to Golden State, they have found a way to exploit what's in the margins. And the margins in this particular case are the older players, mid-40s, late-40s. They're at the end of the reign, their names, but they know they can't really compete on the PGA Tour, and younger players. And that's what Liv Golf is going after. They've made the decision. You can have your Rory McIlroys, and you can have your John Rahms and today's stars. We're going to take yesterday's stars and build this, and one by one we're going to start picking off your young stars, which we've already seen. If you look at this first field, it's littered with young players, U.S. Amateur Champion Andy Ogletree being an example. They're going to start picking off the young stars one at a time. And I always use this as an example. 3.5 years ago, most people did not know who Scottie Scheffler was. Now he's world number one. He's the most dominant player on the planet, and he's won the Masters.
That's a great point. That is a great point. I start thinking about that. If you got patience and you got money, which this does, you eventually create something that, as a young golfer is coming up, he goes, I've got options, and the option is I can play for $8 million purses instead of $2 million, $3 million purses, whatever it may be.
Well, just to clarify, so it's $8 million on the PGA Tour, which would be
all
your
right,
average
purse. So it's going to be more on the other side.
It's going to be a $25 million purse.
I'm way off there, Rex. I'm way off with those numbers.
Just wanted to get the numbers right. Yes, it's going to be dramatic. And this is all going to be contingent on, you touched on it. I don't think it really matters at this point if you can play in the PGA Tour. If you're a young player coming out of college, NCAA championships just finished up last week. So if you're one of those players and you're just finishing up and they've come to you and offered you guaranteed money up front and then whatever you can win on the course with a $25 million purse, and as long as in your mind you can always go back to and qualify for the majors and play in those, I think it could be very attractive.
Yeah. All right, well, let's get to the Memorial in Hideki Matsuyama. We were talking about this, so explain exactly what happened with this three. What he marked it up, and you're not allowed to do that?
Not allowed to do it, and I was just sitting down to write a column this morning, kind of my weekly notes column, and this is one of those areas, and golf has done a pretty good job, I feel like, in recent years of simplifying and sort of condensing the rule book, and it's very, anyone who's ever watched a ruling in golf, I'm sure your average sports fan just watches something like this and rolls their eyes, like, really? Like, we're going to do this. Like, that's really going to get a guy disqualified because he put paint on the face of his three wood because he was trying to see exactly where he was making contact. And, look, no one works harder than Hideki Matsuyama, and this was clearly just an accident. And I can see where this is coming from. In theory, according to the rules of golf, you've changed the dynamics of the club. And in theory, that's not a conforming club anymore. And so because he played it X number of holes, that got him DQ'd. In this particular case, though, like, I even reached out to a manufacturer rep who's on tour week in and week out and know these clubs better than any of us. It didn't change how well it performed. He said, if anything, it probably hurt its performance because you're adding a minute amount of weight to that. So in theory, you're going to slow it down that much more. It's one of those silly rules in golf that I think eventually they get it fixed. But right now I just roll my eyes.
Did this, correct me if I'm wrong, this came from just an Instagram post or a user, somebody outside the golf tent that made them aware of this?
I think that's it. And that's the part, and I've argued the other side of this before. Like, I have plenty of colleagues and certainly plenty of players who hate this. The people on the outside are calling rules infractions, and the argument is that this doesn't happen in any other sport.
Right.
No one looked at a three-pointer last night in the NBA, you know, in the first game of the NBA Finals, and said, nope, his toe was on the line, and they don't get to call in and demand, you know, they review the tape. That doesn't happen. Only in golf does it happen. I counter by saying that if there is an infraction to protect the field, I don't care where – we just want to get it right, right? We just want to make sure everyone's playing by the same rules. I don't care where it comes from. I'm kind of in the minority on that one.
Yeah, because if I'm a player, and correct me if I'm wrong, am I supposed to look at the other guy's bag and clubs? And like, if I have the obligation to protect the field as his playing partner in a tournament, am I supposed to check his stuff and check everything? Am I under obligation to do that?
No, I don't even think that. I mean, that would kind of break some unwritten rules. You can't go rifling through someone's bag.
Yeah, just to make sure he's got 14 clubs and they all look right and there's no added stuff to it.
No, and the tour has in recent years. For example, they test the length of drivers every week on the range. You'll see it on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday where there's kind of board and players can just walk over and make sure because driver length became an issue in recent years. Periodically, they test for what's called the trampoline effect on the face of the club to make sure you're meeting certain tolerances, and sometimes those aren't right. But this isn't NASCAR. You don't have a team rifling through everyone's bag. I mean, that's not golf. I mean, we kind of police ourselves, yeah. So, no, you can't have that.
Rex, good stuff as always, my friend. Thank you so much for joining us.
Appreciate it. See you
got
guys.
It. Rex Hoggard of the Golf Channel joining us, our progressive guest line. All right, when we come back, we'll wrap up the hour, get you set for the weekend. It's Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, when you discover a new favorite bottle of Cabernet or Chardonnay at Total Wine & More, you'll discover a whole lot more. So explore the wondrous selection and totally low prices at TotalWine.com, where you'll find what you love and love what you find. Drink responsibly. Rex Hoggard, again, Golf Channel. Good stuff. $25 million purses for this Live Tour thing. God. Again, if you're the NCAA golf champion and they come at you, you go, I got nothing. Yeah, why wouldn't I do this?
Why not keep that gravy train rolling? He's probably making money through NIL.
Yeah, because you know what the other thing too is? When you're the NCAA golf champion and you still have to qualify for the tour. Like, you still have to earn your tour card. They don't just give it to you. You have to go to Q school. You get some exemptions. You get some exemptions, obviously. That's happened before. But you have to earn your tour card. If they go, hey, you want to be part of a 48-team field that plays 54 holes and there's a $25 million purse? And you go, so even if I finish 40th, I'm still making close to a million? Yes.
Is there a golfer that will legitimize this? I don't think it's Phil, but what if Tiger did it?
See, that's the thing, right? If Tiger actually played in one of these things, it would set the golf world ablaze. Absolute ablaze. All right, enjoy the weekend, everybody. We'll be back on Monday as we'll have game two of the NBA Finals. We'll get a closer feeling for the Stanley Cup Finals. All of that. So enjoy your weekend. Just keep it right here at Sports Map Radio. I'm Tony D, Ron Culver. Thanks for joining us.